Dave Fanning on 2FM.
Now, just before 6 o'clock this evening, we'll know whether it's Manchester City or Liverpool who've won the Premier League for 21-22. But this year marks 30 years, that's right, 30 years since the Premier League began. So we thought the final day of this season was as good a time as any to take a look back on how the Premier League has evolved and changed in those 3 decades and what's next for the most watched sports league in the world. And taking us through it all is Gavin Cooney for the 42. Gavin, you're very welcome to the programme. Gavin, I'm putting on the kettle here. So how did it all begin? It's fair to say, isn't it, that it was the original Super League, wasn't it, really?
It was indeed. Like, all of the wailing of tears and gnashing of teeth about the European Super League last year. I mean, the Premier League wasn't in itself a Super League. You go back all the way to the mid to late 1980s in English football, the big five, as it were, of Liverpool, Everton, Man United, Arsenal and Chelsea, Tottenham rather than Chelsea, we're beginning to realise that, hang on a minute, we can make more money out of this. So they went to the FA and they were agitating to break away from the football pyramid that had all been overseen by the Football Association of England for nearly a century at that point. Mm-hmm. And they got their way. The provenance of it all is found in a fusty old document, the blueprint for the future of English football. It outlined plans for an 18-team Premier League, and the idea was that they would slim down the top division and keep weekends free so the England national team could meet up more often and become more successful. The FA then promptly gave up on that with pretty much just a shrug of the shoulders. When the clubs first met, the chairman of the FA, who was then a man called Bert Millichip, very kind of traditional English gentleman name, the clubs asked the very basic question, well, how many of us will be in this Super League that became known as the Premier League? And Millichip replied, well, it's your league, you decide. So from there on, that was the kind of symbolic shifting of power to the biggest clubs. Poor old Bert was then named Bert the Inert by venerable football writer Brian Glanville. And it went from there, and in 1992 it all launched, and the rest, as they say, is history.
Right, indeed. So 30 years on then from the original vision and setup, what's changed? Have you got an error?
Everything. Yeah. I mean, let's start with the most obvious thing, is the money. Yeah. The money is, it's obvious, you don't even need to point it out. It's absolutely nuts. The average annual salary now of a Premier League footballer is £3.1 million. So what's that? Nearly €4 million.
The average of a Premier League footballer is that much. So like, some of them are getting, I mean, like, I believe Haaland coming into Manchester City is going to get $500,000 a week or something.
Yeah, it'll be in and around that wage bracket. I mean, when the league launched back in, 30 years ago, John Barnes was its top earner. He was on £10,000 a week, which is pretty good at the time. Cristiano Ronaldo is the top earner this season, earning around about £480,000 a week. Earning it, I don't think worth it, but certainly earning it. And then, you know, it's the games are more expensive to go to as well. The cheapest season ticket at Arsenal, for instance, now, look, it's an expensive part of the country, but the cheapest season ticket at Arsenal is just shy of £900. The average ticket for a match is £32 a match. But, you know, football stadium and the Premier League are still pretty much selling out every week. The show, because the show is so good.
Yeah, but I mean, like, it's television that's the money, isn't it?
Oh, massively, yeah. I mean, the percentage of income that's coming from ticket revenue is relatively small, because the league has become, it's not really an English league anymore, is it? Like, it's an international league staged in England. There's foreign players coached by foreign coaches, all paid for by foreign owners. So the money comes from the TV revenue, and the TV revenue is crazy.
What was the famous story? Like, the first British team to win the European Cup was Celtic in 67. And they said that every single player on the team was born within about 5 miles of the ground, you know, of Hampden Park,
yeah,
or whatever.
Correct. So, and it's impossible to imagine that anymore. Like, 66% of the Premier League is non-British players now, you know, so it's totally an international league.
Well, I would have said more, yeah.
Yeah, you think it would be more.
Well, the big teams are, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I mean, this is not just the world's most watched sport. This league that we're talking about is the world's most watched sports league. And the funny thing about it is that you can see it, because every time it comes around to the European Champions League and the last four and the last two, the final next weekend and all the rest of it, there's always a British team there somewhere, isn't there?
Oh, there is, and it's because money talks.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they have the most money. I mean, so therefore they can pay the best money, pay the best wages, and recruit the best players and coaches, and that's how you gain dominance in that sport, as you would in any other walk of life. And it's because it's just the TV money. You know, over the next 3 years, between domestic rights and international TV rights, the Premier League will bring in just over £10 billion.
Well, there you go. Is it true that like every single match that's shown on TV live, be it BT or Sky or whatever, from the league that we're talking about here, is averages at about 10 million a match?
I think that's pretty much right. Yeah,
Right.
and it's made, you know, it's made these relatively small clubs in like a global football sense super rich.
Well,
I
that's the
mean,
other thing. Like the West Hams and the Wolves are rich, aren't they?
they're making more money than AC Milan. You know,
Right.
if you
Yeah.
look at the Deloitte Money League for this year, Leicester, West Ham, Wolves, Everton, all making more money than AC Milan, like one of the great clubs of European football. So that's it's just such a success story. I remember doing an interview with a guy called Josh Robinson, a journalist with the Wall Street Journal, who co-wrote a really good history of the Premier League called The Club. And he said that the Premier League is Britain's most successful export since the Beatles. And the now former chief executive of the Premier League, Richard Scudamore, was once asked, you know, why is this so popular in America and abroad? And he put it down to its sense of Britishness, you know, and he likened it to the royal family or the BBC.
So wait a minute, this league that we're talking about, it's that much higher than La Liga and than the Bundesliga and all the other ones, is it?
Oh, by multiples,
Yeah.
but absolutely by multiples. And you know, one of the appeals is you could argue is it's Britishness, but it's an interesting contradiction, isn't it? I mean, this British league, but it's, you know, foreign players, foreign coaches, pumped full of foreign money. But I was trying to think of like what makes this so attractive. Obviously, okay, it's the standard of the football, but that's, you know, that came second. That wasn't first. The standard of the football has been made great by the money that was pumped into it in the first place. And some people argue, and that journalist who I spoke to a couple of years ago, Josh Robinson, reckoned that it was partly down, at least partly down to the atmosphere. And I would tend to agree with it. Like
Yeah,
if you
yeah.
watch, games, especially in Italy at municipal stadia, you know, there's the big running track between the crowd and the pitch and the
By the way, just on
atmosphere.
that note, what in the name of God's gone on with Real Madrid over the last 6 months? Why is there this huge big blue thing around the side? Are they building the stadium or something?
They are renovating the
Would you
stadium.
get on with it?
They've opened up most of it. I actually don't know why they still haven't done the lower tiers.
I
Like you
must
can
say, it's
imagine.
astonishing the racetrack thing. How to kill a game stone dead, have a racetrack around the side.
Completely, and that's because like you'll see that in Italy and other places where the clubs don't own their stadium, that they rented from the local authority. Where that never happened in England. The football club would generally always own its own stadium, and it goes back to, you know, architectural designs that were drawn up, what, 80, 90, 100 years ago. And partly because just a lack of money, you know, and it's partly down to as well the fact that football is England's national sport. No one
Yeah.
is really paying for athletics, so the stands are always right up beside the pitch. You've got these old tin roofs that manage to amplify sounds, and you know those old, quite, you know, quite ugly stadiums, really, but are generate fantastic atmosphere.
Yeah.
I think that is actually part of selling the product, if I can use a filthy phrase like
Yeah,
that.
by the way, we are talking about the Premier League, 30 years old. It is now Gavin Cooney from the 42. And Gavin, you have been saying there that it's more accurate to say that it's an international league staged in Britain, because in reality, it's a collection of foreign players coached by foreign coaches, paid for by foreign owners. So, would it be fair to say that the Premier League and its fantastic success has had a major impact on Irish football and not in a good way?
Oh, completely. Now, in fairness, I think what's most accurate to say is that English football has always overshadowed Ireland, and because the
I.
Premier League has grown so big, where actually the impact that is had in Ireland since the 1960s is now being felt everywhere around the world. Like you can draw like the League of Ireland match attendances hit their peak in the early 1960s, and they decline almost at the very moment that Match of the Day
Yeah, and
comes
also
on.
you can count your Seamus Colemans on one hand these days, can't you?
Oh, you can. And I mean, Irish football has just, you know, has never really taken much of an interest in developing its own elite players. You get on the boat and go to England, and we'll do that for you. And up until the 1980s, even the 1990s, you know, Man United and Liverpool and the top teams would do that. You know, you'd always have, you know, Ronnie Whelan and Ray Houghton in the Liverpool team, or Paul McGrath in the Man United team, later Roy Keane and Dennis Irwin. And that's because English clubs were just scouting in Ireland. You know, you'd always hear stories about Alex Ferguson's man in Belfast or Alex Ferguson's man in Dublin.
Yeah.
But They've realised, hang on a minute, we're not just going to start shopping in Ireland anymore. We're a global league now. So let's go shopping in South America and in Asia and in Australia and all around Europe. And, you know, so as a result, the Irish talent, I don't think it's still there. It's still being produced, but it's just being pushed down the league. So 25 years ago, Irish players were averaging totalling twice as many minutes of Premier League action as they did last season, for instance.
Okay, well then, the question raised now and for the future by the Premier League is, and this is a very Zen question, so off you go, Kevin. What is a football club actually for?
This, I think, you know, I don't want to get too existential on your listeners this morning, but I think that's ultimately the question that is raised by all this because, you know, the football club was a fairly, you know, once fairly ramshackle operation run by a local businessman, but it had a very kind of defined community purpose. Like it was a community enterprise. But now there's just so much money in the Premier League now. It's obviously a business, but it's like clubs are explicitly saying that they're in the entertainment business. Like Man United have described themselves as one of the biggest content machines in the world. And you actually can't argue with them. Like the hysterical soap drama that it has been over the last couple of years. I mean, I've certainly been glued to it. Man City have explicitly said that their rivals are not necessarily football clubs, but Disney and Netflix and Amazon Plus. But you wonder, like, if they're in the entertainment industry, that's okay for them. But they also rely on the local supporters coming to the stadium to create the atmosphere which is necessary for them to sell their product on television. So that it creates a massive conflict. You know, who is this? Who you're running this for? Are you really running it for the fans, or are they just, you know, added atmosphere so you can sell this all around the world?
Yeah, they're kind of paid extras. Oh, wait a minute, no, they're paying extras.
And then, you know, so that's one level of it. Like, are you just running this as entertainment? And then there's the whole different question that has been raised, and
sports washing.
Completely. Like, should clubs be owned by foreign? Whatever it is about being owned by investment vehicles and hedge funds, etc. Yeah. I mean, there's only 4 of the 20 English Premier League clubs are owned by English people now.
Really?
You know, they mean mostly
and
foreign.
You're talking now Newcastle, Saudi Arabia, Manchester City, Abu Dhabi, and all the rest of it, yeah.
Yeah, you know, and raised by, you know, Abramovich and Chelsea, you know, I mean.
Yeah, and there's so much corruption in football, so much behind the scenes, so much in terms of who gets a World Cup. I mean, seriously, Qatar this year, give me a break. How many brown envelopes? All the rest of it is happening all the time. That it really just takes away from the whole thing. It really does. But like, if I was to ask you to put on your futurologist hat, how do you see the next 30 years going for the Premier League?
I mean, ultimately, who knows? I mean, if you asked 30 years ago this question, no one would have guessed where we have arrived.
Yeah.
I mean, if the Premier League is still standing as it is in 30 years, it'll be an achievement, because the irony of it all, that there's so much money in English football that the rest of Europe has got jealous. You know, your Real Madrid, Barcelona, Juventus, these establishment clubs are looking on jealously thinking, hang on, we need a piece of this money. Like, why the English clubs are racing way ahead of us. So that was their Super League idea. And now the English clubs, through their own greed and stupidity, wanted to get on board with it. It was notable that they were among the first people to pull out when public opinion turned against them. So if I was to guess, and you know, football is kind of an embrace of endless growth and endless money pumping into it, my guess, and I realise it is a hot take, but it is a hot take that can't be disproved for 30 years, so I feel safe saying it, that the Premier League as we know it now won't exist.
Okay, right. Yeah, well, I mean, like, I think the Super League by stealth will probably come in some way. I don't think there's much question about that. But anyway, let's just see what happens. Finally, a more pressing prophecy. Who's going to win the Premier League this afternoon, Manchester City or Liverpool?
This is my hot take that can be disproved very quickly. I think I will take the boring answer and I'll take Manchester City. They have the lead in their own hands.
They really do, yeah.
So it would be, you know, it'd be it would be the great narratives and one of the great stories if Steven Gerrard, the Aston Villa manager, can take a point and finally win a league title.
Wouldn't that be hilarious, handing it over to Liverpool?
Win the league he couldn't win as a player, finally delivered as a manager, and I'm sure the people of Liverpool would pay his taxi fares right up to Anfield to join the celebrations.
Yeah, I'd say they would. All right, listen, Gavin, thank you very much indeed. It's going to be a fun afternoon. All right, both games obviously kick off same time, yeah.
Yeah, 4 o'clock. Everything's concurrent in the drama. It'll be a 2-hour sprint.
Yeah, indeed it will. Right. Okay, listen, Gavin Cooney from the 42. Come on yourself, Gavin. Thank you very much indeed. We'll see you in 30 years. Take it easy.
See you then, Dave.
I'll tell you what, I'm going to play a piece of music here now. You ready for this? Look, the Sultans of Ping, FC, of course. Give them a ball and a yard of grass. Let's go.
Dave Fanning on 2FM.